Good guy.
He was a good guy.
But he drank too much.
Call the House Committee on Agricultural and Natural Resources to order. It's Tuesday, May 26th. Our chair will be back in just a few minutes. We're going to change the order a little bit and start out with Senate Bill 361. Senator Pavansky. Open a public hearing on 361.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair and committee members. Floyd Przanski, State Senator, District 4, which includes parts of Lane and Douglas counties. Thank you very much for taking up Senate Bill 361. You'll be hearing from the certified smart people after I leave the dais. What this bill is basically trying to do is ensure enough communication occurs between the state and the counties. We have worked through a work group, and they have come up with a means of making certain that before Dogami takes action, they have heard affirmatively some type of position that the counties have taken on a proposed site. The reason we think this is important to ensure that constituents who live within those areas of where mining is going to be allowed, that they're just notified and they know what's happening before it actually occurs, and also in the sense of giving the county the opportunity to have their input into the state process before the state acts on it. We had one situation in my district where it appeared that the state felt that they had, since they had not heard from the county, and the county did not actually process the information they had received from the state in a positive sense, meaning that they didn't know that they had this sitting on their table because of staffing levels, etc. And then by the time they got to it, it was one of those scenarios that the state had already acted, and this county thought that they should have been able to have more opportunity to say, but it's one of the things where the left hand didn't know what the right hand was doing. What we're trying to do here is just to ensure that communication is actually takes place, and no matter what the position is, everyone knows what that position is. Mr. Vice Chair, that's the extent of the bill. And like I said, I know Alex Kyler's here, and I'm not sure if other people in the work group, including Rich Engstrom, if he's going to be testifying. I didn't have a chance to look. But I was very pleased with what they did as a work group and sitting down and coming up and communicating of how they thought this would be best solved. And I believe this is a measure that will be good for the state and the counties, which means also our constituents, and also that all of the interest groups are satisfied with the resolution that's come forward. Thank you very much.
Okay. Senator, is this issue around mostly around ag land?
Representative Krieger, or should I say Vice Chair Krieger, and committee members. I can't say that it's mostly around ag land. It is where there are potential mines that have already land that's already been designated for mining has already been specified back in the 1970s. What has happened in some cases is some of these individual parcels have been known and are known to be sites, but they're dormant, and they have been dormant for decades. And then what potentially happens is one of them becomes active, and they have the right to become active, but maybe the area that's surrounding the site has developed a little bit more in population and residents, and it's one of those scenarios that people may be moving into areas without really knowing they're moving into an area that has a mine or zoned for mining. And so what we're trying to do is figure out ways that we can ensure individuals the best information possible to know that prior to actually moving into these areas that they are moving into an area that's already been predetermined to be a mining area. I do believe many of them are ag farm areas, but I don't believe all of them are.
Okay. Committee members, you have any questions?
I do. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if this allows third-party intervention to stop a mining process that's already been approved from going forward?
Mr. Vice Chair and Representative Wissett, no, it does not. This is basically a notification, and it's really ensuring that the county has had the opportunity to give the input, and also what we've worked on and what they will describe is how they are setting up links on different websites to ensure individuals who are potentially moving into these areas will hopefully get the information that they can do their own information-seeking discovery before they actually make a determination whether they're going to buy. But no, there's no right to third-party intervention.
Thank you.
Representative Esquivel, you have
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, is this an anomaly that just happened within your area down there, or is, because I haven't heard of anything, is there a big crying out of a need for this?
Representative Krieger, again, Vice Chair Krieger, and Representative Esquivel. My understanding, this is not uncommon, meaning that it's not totally unique. It did happen within the Lane County portion of my district, but I do understand that there are other areas where these dormant mines are at, and for giving that type of information out on the website, we felt is going to give individuals more information before they make a decision of what they might want to do in the sense of a real estate transaction. Also, I think the important part is ensuring that there is the communication between the county and the state regarding the permit processing.
Thank you.
Representative Barato.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You says for communication between the counties and the state. Does it give the counties any more authority to make the decision?
Vice Chair Krieger and Representative Barato, not to my knowledge, it does not. My understanding, this is basically just gives them the ability to put on the record what they're doing. The certified smart people who will be coming after me will be able to, I think, give you that specific answer, but my understanding, it does not.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Can we have Rich Angstrom and Alex come up, please?
Good morning. Rich Angstrom, president of the Oregon Concrete and Aggregate Producers Association. I hope everybody had a good Memorial Day. I spent the weekend getting the garden in and worked with my mom. We're going to do a bunch of canning this year, so we got our cucumbers and squash and all that kind of fun stuff in. My morning started out with my new purple shirt. My wife told me it looked hideous, so I actually think it looks pretty good myself. So off
on a good way to start the day.
We're supportive of this bill. It is somewhat of a unique circumstance that's occurred in Lane County, and I understand there's been three circumstances. But just as a way of history, I think this will help. In 1972 or so, when the land use laws went into effect, mining, just as a general matter, was really kind of overlaid over farm and forest lands, because you don't really know where the minerals are, and you didn't know where the aggregate deposits were. So we became a permitted use on both farm and forest lands at that time. What most of the counties did is they put the aggregate sites on an inventory that they knew were in existence at the time. Some of those sites have sat dormant for quite a period of time, but they still sit on the county inventories in all the counties across the state. What we're finding, and why this there's starting to be a little bit of a conflict, is it's getting to be so hard to get sites permitted that many of the companies, what they're doing is looking around to find these old sites that are out and about and are on the inventory because they're grandfathered in, right? And so, between 1972 and 2015, houses and other kinds of things have come in and grown up around them. The sites are part of the inventory, but they have to get their operating permit still through DOGAMI, and actually they still have to get some of their land use authority in certain circumstances through the county. So that's the reason a couple of these sites have cropped up. The Parvin Butte site, which is the site that is the reason for the bill, is actually zoned on forest land. So the conflicts with aggregate industry isn't just confined to agricultural land. It's also on forest land. So that's kind of the history of it. When Alex and sat down and talked to me about the issue of the Parvin Butte situation, it was pretty apparent, and just to be frank, is that the staff at Lane County kind of dropped the ball and didn't comment on the application that was before the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. Be that as it may, that happens often. Counties don't comment on various things, especially things that are on inventory. So DGAMI just went ahead and issued the permit. And in the meantime, quite a number of houses had grown up around the Parvin Butte site, and it became quite a contentious issue. And so the industry heard the concern, realizing that there may be more of these conflicts that occur in the future, just given how difficult it is to get aggregate sites. And there's actually quite a number of mine sites that are on inventories that are sitting dormant. We felt that it was worth it, that they identified a reasonable problem that needed to be fixed. And we worked, Alex and I and DGAMI, Rich Riggs, worked out the language there that requires the department and the counties to talk more before they issue permits. Even though the county doesn't have really, in this particular circumstance, doesn't really have authority to deny the site, what they should have the ability to still comment just like anybody else. And we want to make sure that their comments come in to avoid some of the conflicts that caused a lot of the trouble in Lane County, both for the senator as well as Lane County, which has had to deal with the aftermath of it. So we think this is a good bill, and it increases the communication between the two governmental entities, and hopefully bring some of the tension down when these old relic sites come back to life as we're in need of aggregate resources. So with that, I'll conclude my testimony, and thank you very much.
Good morning,
Mr. Chair. Good morning, committee members. I'm Alex Kyler. I'm Lane County's Intergovernmental Relations Manager. I think Rich and the Senator did a nice job of summarizing what the bill does. Lane County we have good rock. We have, as Rich talked about, we have quite a bit of rural areas outside of the Eugene-Springfield metropolitan area that are zoned, for example, rural residential 5, so this is a 5-acre minimum. Some of those can go down to about 2 acres, but these are primarily sort of hobby farms, if you will, but within 15 to 20 minutes of the Eugene-Springfield metropolitan area with easy access. Rich mentioned Parvin Butte. So what happens there is that this was an old site. It was the rock that built Lookout Point Reservoir's dam. Really good rock, actually. In fact, investors have looked at it for shipping out to the coast via the railroad because it's hard enough for jetty rock. So, as Rich indicated, it was our fault, but we did have we were moving offices and we've had some staffing shortfalls. Essentially, that's the heart of it, though, is that when the county does not comment, DGAMI sort of takes it as a yes, that everything is okay. And everything was not particularly okay with the neighbors when trees started falling, blasting started occurring, excavators were on site, rock grinders. There were complaints, and they complained to the county. We essentially had no idea of what was going on out there because of that missed communication. And we have, as Rich indicated, had a couple other fairly contentious sites, one down in the southern part of the county and one in Coburg, where neighbors have been concerned about this what becomes sort of an industrial site adjacent to their property. So the bill does fix it, we think. It establishes better communication between the two agencies prior to permitting, and in fact we've got sort of a fail-safe mechanism where if the agency has not heard from the county, they reach out once again prior to issuing the permit for additional comment. And I did want to mention Rich talked about the county having as much comment as anybody else. In fact, we are the only comment. The public doesn't really get a voice in this, and that was part of the frustration around Parvin Butte, where the public felt, or the neighbors felt, like the county had really dropped the ball on their behalf. They didn't have an opportunity to express their opinion. We actually held a hearing on the one quarry down in Crestwell, but it was a very sort of dicey hearing in that the Board of County Commissioners could not discuss anything related to the permit because it would have otherwise been considered a land use decision. So we had to coach them pretty tightly to just hold the hearing, allow the public to be heard. I think Senator came down for that one, and but not deliberate towards any kind of decision for fear of sort of polluting that process. So at any rate, the county does have the voice that can set sort of the time, place, and manner standards for the operation. We have no authority to put a stop to the operation, and I do want to make that clear that that decision to put these sites aside as a mineral resource was made back in 1970-71 with a land use system. So, again, the county is charged with mitigating conflict between the surrounding areas and the mining operation, but we must allow that mining to go forward, and the board gave me direction to go try to improve communication between the two agencies. I think Senate Bill 361 does that. And I do want to compliment, we've worked with Rich and Ogami for actually a couple sessions on this, and we're delighted to be in front of you, and we've had good compromise throughout.
Thank you very much. With that, I'm going to temporarily close the public hearing on Senate Bill 361A, and I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 881. Good morning, Senator. Welcome to our committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. Again, my name is Floyd Przonski, State Senator, District 4, again, representing parts of Lane and Douglas counties. Senate Bill 881 is a bill that has come before you. We're dealing with industrial hemp, specifically bringing into the definitions of seed and making certain that the Department of Ag, who oversees hemp production, has the ability to actually regulate and control and process seed underneath the definition of industrial hemp. That's basically what the bill is for. And I will tell the committee, this is a bill that I started working on back in 1997 in the sense of for industrial hemp. It took 12 years for it to get passed. And I will also tell you at this point, this is one of those scenarios that we need to ensure that the agency has the ability to regulate throughout the commodity and ensuring that they have the ability to do what they need to do. I will also tell you at the same time, now that we have a potential of another conflict with marijuana in the sense of cannabis and how that's moving forward, it's going to be very unique to see how the two work together, but both of them have the opportunity to bring significant revenue into rural areas based on the projections.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Representative Whitsitt, please.
Yes, I was wondering, it states low THC. What is the percentage of THC that's how you identify hemp versus marijuana?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Whitsitt, I don't have the definition in front of me, but if I remember correctly, it's 0.01 or 0.03. It's very, very, very low.
Okay. Thank you.
Additional questions or comments? Senator, thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much.
We have been chasing each other around the building this morning. I hope to be in your committee here shortly.
We'll look for you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. With that, I'm going to temporarily close the public hearing on Senate Bill 881, and I'm going to reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 361A. And would the previous witnesses please come forward again? With that, I'm going to recognize Representative Whitsitt.
Thank you. So this is written broadly for operating permit for surface mining. So you've been discussing primarily gravel, if you will. So let's think about Eastern Oregon. And my question is, if this would supersede any federal guidelines for mining permits, or would this also affect mining claims that have federal mining claims that have historically been identified? So, you know, we're talking about something totally different, and I know that you can describe for the committee what I'm asking.
So, Chair Witt and Representative Whitsett. We were very careful in the language not to put it in the operating section as far as a requirement in the OGAMI statute that would affect the operating permitting process within the state agency. There's another section in statute that just talks about how the department communicates with the local governments, and we put that amendment in that section of that statute. And so it has no effect on any on the applicant in any kind of fashion. It's only about how the agency will talk to the local government, and the local government will talk to the agency. With respect to your federal issue, yes, it is applied to all surface mine, and surface mine could be any mineral as long as it's surface dug. This is not an underground situation. So it could be a copper mine or a nickel mine down in your area, or some gold mines down in your area. But if they're going to get permitted, in their old relic sites like this, which I kind of doubt for the more of the precious, hard rock type mines, they would have, and they were already on an inventory in some fashion, and they wanted to go out and start mining on them, they would have to do that. Now, Dogami has all the exemptions in place still, for 5,000 cubic yards or less, which actually is a lot of dump truck loads, right? All of those still apply. So I guess the point is this is just very specific in one section of a statute. It should have no effect on anything the feds do at all. I can't even imagine anything from a federal process. But it does apply to all surface mines. So you're right about that.
Vice Chair McLean, followed by Representative McEwen.
I was just wondering about the 35 days. You've noticed there that you say that the county can respond in 35 days. It just seems like a big issue, I was just hoping that you could tell a bit more about why you think that 35 days is appropriate, especially since you described quite a few sort of contentious issues with the public.
Sure. Chairman Witt, Representative McLean, there is in statute, there's a clock that begins to tick once an applicant has made their application has been deemed complete. And so we're operating within that window. There's an exception to that if a county has to change their comp plan.
Okay.
And that's one of those pieces of communication that occurs within that first 35 days, is the county may respond and say, it's going to take a comp plan change. We're going to really need some significant time. Otherwise, the idea is to say, well, the county says, you're good to go. And I think I don't have it in front of me, but I think it's
180
days. Yeah. It's 180 or 145 days. But at any rate, we needed to find a number that would work within that timeline. And 35 days was what we came up with as being reasonable for the county to get back to the agency. The agency would still have enough time to process the rest of the application and get it out to the applicant within their statutory timeline.
Thank you.
Chair Witt, Representative McLean, only thing I would say is before the bill, I think it was 30 days, and we actually added 5 days to the time that the local governments comment.
Representative McEwen, followed by Vice Chair Krieger.
Thank you, Chair Witt. And,
Mr. Angster, I don't know if this is a question for you or a question for Dogami, but would this have any impact on surface mining that chromite, garnet, zircon, ferrous material that's mined down on the South Coast?
Chair Witt and Representative McEwen, those are already permitted, those sites down there. Mm-hmm. And so any existing site that's up and operating and it already has all of its land use authority, it would not have an effect on us. This only would have an effect where we have that unique situation where you have these old inventoried sites that are not currently being mined, regardless of what type of activity that is. So hypothetically, if there was a chromite mine out there that was zoned as such back in 1971-72 time frame, one of the Oregon Resources Corporation wanted to start mining it, and they noted that it was inventoried on the local government's site somewhere, then these provisions would apply. But I really doubt that's a circumstance that's out there. And this would have no effect on the existing chromium mine out there.
And the communication piece is the important piece, is that the county and the state are talking to each other with Dogami in the conversation, is what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah, and what we're trying to avoid is just these surprises that happen, which create, tension for the department, frankly, creates a problem for the local governments. And from the mining perspective, when these things blow up, we're just drugged back into either court or we're drugged back into the local governments or back into the department. And we just assume have those conversations and notices and things up front to save ourselves the sure. grief on the back end. And so that was, kind of our rationale to sit back and, be a little more proactive and solve the problem. Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate your work.
Vice Chair Krieger?
They were talking about the 35 days that they have to respond. But if you go to the staff major summary, it talks about their ability to request for a delay. How long can a delay be separate from the time that they have to make a reply?
So, Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, actually the delay is already in statute. And the local government, as even without this bill, could request the department not issue their permit until they take final action on the land use authority. So we wanted to make sure that we did not change that at all. This just applies again to the circumstances where it's already on the inventory and you're not actually going for the land use approval. So we have to put it in that section where that has that delay language in it. But that's a different situation where they're going through essentially a brand new permitting activity, and then the local governments can say, hey, Dogami, don't get in front of us. We want to resolve our issues first. As soon as we issue our local permit, then you can take final action with a department. It does create a problem a little bit if you end up with this is when it happens, when the delay is actually asked for, is you end up with a fairly contentious gravel site in Lane County, and the department gets through their permitting process faster than the local government issues the permit. It's a little bit of getting the cart in front of the horse, and because the local government just makes the decision of whether there's going to be a mine site, and the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries makes more of the decision on how the mine is going to mining is going to occur. So we'd rather the statute works so the decision of whether the site gets permitted is done before the how.
Representative Duskerville.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Who's going to be responsible for notifying the residents, and how far do you notify them? I mean, how many feet away, or how do you work that? Would that be the county would be the one?
Chair Witt and Representative Esquivel, there are There's a couple ways to answer that. I mean, if in the case we were just describing, where the county did ask for, hey, we've got to go through a local land use process to change the comp plan to allow something, there's a public notification of citizens through that process. However, in this case, where you're reopening a permitted site that might have been dormant for many years, you know, that the public, as I testified earlier, that public comment occurred back in the 70s when the site was being placed under this designation as a aggregate resource. So that is that period has passed. That site is deemed to be at some point in time excavated. That's a legal action. So there's only the notification only comes to neighbors, only comes if there's something that's peripheral to that process. And that is part of the issue that was so contentious down around Parvin Butte, was where neighbors thought they were looking at a beautiful little hillside, a little butte, and then suddenly it had no trees on it and started to get, you know, clawed away at it. But it had been mined extensively previously in its existence for Lookout Dam. So there's sort of two ways to answer that. There is some public notice if the comp plan is going to be changed. Otherwise, these things are essentially permitted outright, and it is the job of the county, as I said, to mitigate any conflicts between the neighbors and the site, but always in favor of the site itself.
Please.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. But wouldn't your comp plan have allowed for that in the first place, since it's been in place since the 70s?
Chairman Witt and Representative Esquil, absolutely. It's only that process of the asking for the delay only occurs where there's a new site being suggested. And again, that was a conflict we had where Delta Sand and Gravel wanted to expand their operation, which happened to be inside the UGB, but outside of the city limits. So that one was where we actually had to make a comp plan adjustment, and we couldn't get the three jurisdictions at the time to agree.
Thank you.
Hi. Representative Whitson.
I have a further question. So I'm just trying to understand this. So if this bill doesn't impact the ability of the mine to go forward, I don't understand why it matters then what the people think or their input. I mean, I'm not understanding this exactly. You're saying on one hand this has nothing to do with if the mine goes forward. On the other hand, you're saying, well, there's a lot of input from the people. Obviously the people are having input because they're upset and they don't want the mine to go forward. So I'm confused about what this bill does exactly. And I'd further like to say we do have occasion where as the cost or value of gold goes up and down, we reopen those mines routinely. And so I sort of see this bill as another impediment to mining, to surface mining on claims or sites that have already been approved. And so I guess I'm just not understanding. I apologize. We're not getting it.
We appreciate it, Chair Witt and Representative Whitson. Well, it took two sessions because that's where we started out last session. let me try this again from the perspective of the county, I think is the way I want to approach this. For sure that the decision to mine has already been made and it's on an inventory, right? The site's on an inventory. And that was done when the comp plan was changed in 71, and the public had a chance to comment about it at that point. But the site still has to get its operating permit. It's still from the local government eventually, or from Dogami. It's a little strange because for sure you have to get the Dogami permit. In some circumstances, you have to get the an operating permit. It's just timing and how each jurisdiction might happen. In Linn County, in this case, you did not have to do that. So, but what happens is the local government needs to at least know that the mining is going to take place, and so that they're not having to deal with, you know, an irate public, or at least can prepare to deal with an irate public about the mine site and that they didn't get notice. And from our perspective, we think that it actually is helpful to have good communications between the two agencies. For sure, it doesn't change the weather. That decision was already made when they, you know, a long time ago. But the county can talk about how. And so before Dogami, issues their permit, Lane County in this circumstance could have said, hey, some of the complaints up there were rocks on the road. Some of them was hours of operation. The local government can say, we want you to condition the Dogami permit to make sure that you're only operating in a certain, you know, hours of the day because you're now in a residential area. The county could have said, hey, you're going to be coming off of that site, we want to make sure that you walk the truck and you take off, you know, any rocks that when you're filling the truck or sitting on the frame and those kinds of things. I mean, I can think of, you know, 50 conditions like that. And it just helps the Department then of Geology and Mineral Industries think through some of the conflicts that may be out there that they may not be thinking themselves. And we think that is a good function, and it'll actually bring some of the tensions down on the, you know, around those mine sites being reactivated.
So this is more to condition the permit than is what I'm hearing you say, is that it can never stop it from going forward, but it puts conditions on it. Okay, that's a lot more helpful to understand. But you're saying there is no way for them to absolutely impede the permit once it's been forwarded. I mean, allowed to go forward.
Chairman Witt and Representative Witsit, right, this is just this is a communication. Dogami, it's our opportunity to comment. They hopefully integrate those comments into their operating permit. I think what Rich indicated as well about not being taken by surprise. I mean, good example is the decision we made to actually hold a hearing down in the community of Cresswell over a site that had, when it was previously operating, had some enforcement around it. There was a lot of contentiousness, some conflict between the neighbors. We knew that the site was going to be potentially coming up again for operation. So we actually decided to hold a hearing. We had Dogami down there. We had the neighbors. We had the Board of Commissioners convene a meeting. And I think it just brought that level of tension down. People had an opportunity to testify. Like I said, those of us who were pretty close to it knew that there wasn't really any formal action that could occur, but at least people were talking. And I think that was what served. And the important thing is that we knew, because of this communication, that the site could be starting up again. And that was the big problem up at Parvin, was that we were just sitting there going, well, we didn't know, and thus we had no opportunity to suggest some of the conditions to the site that we otherwise would have.
Vice Chair McLean.
Actually, I can pass because that was my question. It was answered well. Thank you. Yeah.
Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So there's really, in my understanding, I'm a little confused too, but so there's the dormant mine that really can't do anything about. It's operational. But then you said there's the new permitting too, and so if there's a mine on the books that's already been approved way back when, it hasn't ever been mined, then the county has the authority to either say go or no go.
Yeah, Chair Witt, Representative, we're getting really into the weeds on this, so let me that's a good question. when all of these sites back in 1971, 72 timeframe were put on these inventories and swept in, the easiest way for, instead of having to go through and repermit all of these mine sites, and is they just really pretty much just swept them in with all of their operating authority in place. They were grandfathered from any conditions that could be imposed on them. The reason I hedged on that question is a little bit is we have a number of members. Our process takes so long to get through a permitting process. Our companies actually plan out decades. I have members, and one of the things I had to really focus in on this bill is that have permits, went through and got their PAPAs, basically got on their plan amendments, and they're their reserve sites, Knife River, Old Castle, all of them do this. They have not gone back to the county for their operating authority in this unique, in this circumstance. That's not the sites that were swept in, but this is how the industry manages and tries to think in the future where the aggregates need is going to be, and because of the difficulty in permitting, the length of time for permitting is up to 10 years sometimes for some of these mine sites, is that they'll go through the plan amendment process, they'll get them on the plan amendment, they still have to go through the county operating authority, and they still have to get the Dogami permit, but they want to get the site established as a mine site on the comp plan as stage one. So there's multiple stages that happen and multiple permits that happen to get any mine site to where it can actually operate. So you have to get your site on a plan amendment at a local government, and then you got to get an operating permit from the local government, and then you get the Dogami permit, and I'm not even touching the DEQ, water resources, feds, and the dozens of other permits that we have to do before we can mine. So I didn't want to get into the weeds on it that much, but that's the thing we were really focused on from the industry side of things, and why we did not want it into the operating side of the statute. We wanted it in the communication side of the statute to avoid any conflict with pre-planning. It was an excellent question, but now we're getting really into the nuance of how mining gets permitted. Thank you.
Representative McKeown.
Oh, thank you, Chair Witt. Could you give me some sense of how this plays out? We're talking about Lane County in essence here. That's where this problem was identified. But is this going to play itself out in the Rogue Valley and the Umpqua River Valley? And I mean, is this going to replicate itself all over the state? How big is the impact of what's happening here?
Chair Witt, Representative McKeown, I think we asked Dogami in this process to go and start figuring out what the number of non-active inventory sites are and work with the counties so we could get a sense of what the problem is. Talking with my members, I know there's still a lot of inventory sites out in all the counties that are not currently operating. And we think, because, again, how difficult it is to get these things permitted, the companies are just simply going, one, there's no certainty in the permitting process. Two, they don't like having to be vilified at the local government level trying to get one of these things through. And the cost and uncertainty is just getting to be ridiculous to get an aggregate site. It's the easiest thing to do is go to the path of least resistance, and that's to go find all of these basically historic mine sites and move into those and start working with those, because there's already a footprint established. They've already got their operating permit they're already on an inventory. They're already on on a plan amendment, so they don't even have to go through that aspect of it. So really, from an industry's perspective, you got a certain mine site. It saves you money. And you really don't have as much of the public pressure as you do on a greenfield site. We think it will affect more sites. Lane County is the only spot right now that we've seen that occur. But with the growth of the state and population pressures all over, we think that it could crop back up, and this is a way to, again, be proactive, get in front of it.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Krieger.
go back to the existing mine site that hasn't been operating, they have right then come in and be noticed and request a delay. Then can the county impose new conditions on that existing site? Because that could drive up the, in other words, you can't operate except between 10 o'clock and 4 in the afternoon or whatever it might be, or haul during certain hours. That might make that site, which was a very viable otherwise, with conditions now not viable.
Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, in this unique circumstance, with the inventoried sites that were placed on it at the time the land use law went into effect, the county can only ask Dogami to consider their comments just like anybody else. And then the department has to weigh those comments and give the applicant an opportunity to respond. I would bet if it's a good neighbor policy, the department would probably be listening pretty close to the local government. If the operator, the aggregate operator, has a good case why the condition would make it economically unviable or something like that, they could respond or rebut the condition. So all of that's just good communication in the ebb and flow between then the local governments, the applicant, and Dogami. So I would say that the answer is no, that in that unique situation, the local government cannot impose the condition. They can only request that the department consider it and try to condition the permit.
Representative Woodson.
Another question that comes to mind as I listen. How many of these sites are there statewide? I know you are talking about aggregate, and I'm over in Eastern Oregon, Southern Oregon. I'm concerned about other mines, not aggregate. You know, I mean, I think it's all lumped together here, and I was wondering why this isn't specifically for aggregate mining, because this encompasses stuff out in Rep. Benz's area and mine that, you know, don't influence a lot of people, but I can see just from past experience certain individuals going to the commissioners and saying, we don't like that because it might interfere with a deer path or, you know, I mean, I'm seeing it differently than you're seeing it because you're looking at aggregate. I'm looking at other mining in other parts of the state and seeing potential problems. I was wondering why this bill wasn't specifically for aggregate mining, like on the west side or something where you have a lot of people.
Chair Witt, Representative Witsit, what I would say is on the the work group did talk considerable about how many of these inventoried sites are out there. And we don't have a firm number, but I think we decided that we need to get a firm number so we can identify them and let all the different counties know where those sites are. And it's going to take some work between AOC and Dogami to kind of sort that out. And we identified the need to do that, but for this bill, we did not go ahead and give you a hard number. I think it's something that needs to be done. I think the first step actually would be to go and identify all of those and make sure the county knows that these are inventory sites. I'll bet you that almost all of them are aggregate sites and very few of them are any other minerals. The other thing I would just point out is we are sensitive from the industry, and this is kind of where you're going, that the industry, when they move into a mine site, does not necessarily operate at 24/7, 12 months out of the year. They might in 2008 when the economy hit its peak and they're going crazy. But I can tell you by the time 2012 and 13 rolled around, many, many, many mine sites were closed down because the demand was not there. In fact, it wasn't one of the first bills 20 years ago that I ran was a bill on an abandonment where the local governments had said that if you had not used your mine site for a year, you abandon your your mine site and your permitting for that mine site. We said, whoa, whoa, that's not how the industry works. We ebb and flow with the economy. ODOT, too. ODOT was right with us going, hold it, guys, you don't understand, on Eastern Oregon, we may not visit a mine site for 10 years when the next highway project comes through. So there's a natural ebb and flow of that, and we want to make sure we protect the mining authority given the you know, kind of the unique nature of how mining occurs. So I would say that if you're worried about, like, you know, gold and copper and, you know, other things that have been permitted in the past, if they were placed on the inventory back in the day, they're protected. They have the weather is already decided. In fact, from the county's perspective, if that happened, the how is also decided too. Dogami, they still have to get the Dogami permit. And the only thing the county can do is say gold mine in Klamath Falls to say, hey, look, we're worried about some water quality related issues or sage grouse now, or, you know, whatever the newest thing is, and we want to make sure that you consider those when you issue the permit. I don't think it's a big concern with the unique issue of the inventoried sites that are already on there. Now, if you're going to get into the fact that Oregon's got plenty of minerals that we haven't been able to explore, that, you know, has been the basis of some of the other presentations we've done in front of this committee, that's about new siting and getting new permits and generating economic activity for new sites and encouraging companies to come in with the unique family wage jobs. And I mean, it's good money for workers around mine sites. So I want to assure you that I actually think for the Old Relic sites that are for hard rock or precious metals, I think they're going to be okay.
Chairman Witt?
Anything further from the committee?
Vice Chair Krieger.
I might feel comfortable if this was Lane County and the rest of it be held off until you got your inventory done.
Please.
Chairman Witt and Representative Krieger, I just want to suggest that what we set out to do here was not to instill new policy. This communication was already in statute. The request for a delay, that decision at the county level when Dogami is circulating for comments amongst not only local agencies but state agencies, that essentially we had two things to do. All this bill tries to do is suggest, let's make sure that communication is improved. And so we did vet this on the Senate side. We did actually have AOC come up and talk about, they've vetted it with their land use planners. People seem to be okay with it. There was an interesting case over in Deschutes County that had to do with a conflict between a site and some new residences around a water ski facility. You might remember that one. And your comment, Representative Witsit, about deer going through was one that was brought up there. In talking to those folks, they didn't think this bill would actually have any influence on how that process played out. So, like I said, we really tried to keep this narrow in scope to figure out, let's just make sure that when that communication is supposed to happen, it actually does happen, and get away from this situation where no communication from the county is deemed sort of a yes, move forward.
Chair Witsit, Representative Krieger, I hear you. We talked about the fact that maybe we should just limit this to Lane County. But when our industry reviewed it and we've talked about it, we come down on the side that we think it's good state policy to have good communications between the two agencies, and that this is proactive. It'll get in front of issues wherever they may crop up. It'll help from that perspective. I think pretty uniformly amongst our industry that we felt pretty comfortable with this is just from a policy perspective that this is okay to have tightened up communications between the two agencies, essentially local government and Dogami, that have to make these decisions. In fact, if you ask me, I actually think we'll be back at the table over time as we try to get, we run out of aggregate and we end up with more and more conflicts trying to get this stuff through, with more bills that are going to be designed for the permitting folks on how they're going to communicate. The process for getting any mine site through, Jim Brown, a few years ago we actually had a mediation with the Farm Bureau and a bunch of other interested folks over aggregate, and he likened the permitting process for mining as a bumblebee that he doesn't know how it got off the ground, but it seems to fly. And that's how that was his term for how mining permitting works in the state. It's big and cumbersome, and it's amazing that a couple of wings can actually get it off the ground. I can tell you, after doing this for 20 years, I think it's an awful process. But this is a step to making it a little bit better, I think, and it'll actually help people out more than it's going to hurt. And that's our point that I want to stress here.
Rich, you mentioned that sometime in the unspecified future, times could get tough in terms of permitted aggregate mines. I have personally been through that. It's not a pretty thing. How close are we time-wise? And I know that it's cyclical in terms of the demand for aggregate, those sorts of things. But are we facing any critical reality here anytime in the foreseeable future?
Chair Witt, some companies have 50-year supplies of aggregate. Some companies are knocking on the door. And we've even seen companies disappear now because of it. The one thing I would say, and this really concerns me a lot, is because of the permitting process has gotten so difficult, all of the family-owned businesses have just, they can't one afford it. They don't want to have to go through the process because of, you know, how miners are treated in this state, and then just the costs have become exorbitant. And so what we've seen is, and some of my big members won't like this, but we've seen a consolidation of the industry and the bigger are getting bigger because they have the economies of scale to get through these sites, and we've lost the family-owned businesses. And there's only a few. I'll tell you, here's an example. I haven't lost very many membership over my time. I think I had like 120 producers when I joined OCAPA 20 years ago. I have a little over 40 producers now. They've all been bought up by the big companies. And again, the same thing. Is a big company with money, look a Knife River or an Old Castle or a Cal Portland or a CMEX, they look at how they're going to get their next aggregate source, and it's better just to go buy out a sole proprietorship, a family-owned business, and get that aggregate secured, then go through a new permitting process. So we've been just cannibalizing, and the next iteration, if we've done all of that, is these old historic mines that are out there. So, I'm very worried about it myself. But I would say that, you know, given the nature of the economy at the moment, we're in good shape. I know our guys are really thinking about pre-planning now, knowing that growth will be back. And, you know, I can imagine there's going to be some more permitting activity or more consolidation. And each company tends to find that path. So.
And I would suspect that the mining industry is not unique in that respect. I can think of no better way to drive concentration ratios than to limit supply of natural resources. Anything further, committee members? Gentlemen, thank you so very, very much. Is there anyone else from the public who would like to testify this morning on Senate Bill 361A? Last and final call. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 361A. Mr. Gallagher, we do not have any more witnesses, I understand, for Senate Bill 881?
No one that has signed up.
Is there anyone who wished to testify this morning from the public on Senate Bill 881? Then my previous closure on that hearing will stand. And with that, I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 209. Mr. Gallagher, can you remind us, please, what this bill is about?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 209 requires the Invasive Species Council to appoint a state invasive species coordinator and establishes the coordinator as a non-voting ex officio member of the council. Clarifies that 17 other council members are authorized voting members.
Thank you very much. Committee members, any questions or discussions on this bill?
Just one.
Please, Vice Chair Krieger.
This coordinator is a paid position.
The coordinator is a paid position, and we do have a fiscal impact of the proposed legislation. This position is contemplated in the governor's budget, and the amount allocated is $141,329 general fund.
And I believe that we had a, I believe that we had a statement on this or information on this previously that this bill was good to go to the floor.
That's correct. That's the information that we had.
Yes. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Vice Chair McLean.
For interest's sake, I just wanted to tell you that I had 48 students from a charter school in Forest Grove that had studied this bill as one of their bills, and they came down for a two-day legislative process and some work at Willamette University. And these are 7th, 8th, and 9th graders. And one of the 7th graders there wanted me to watch this bill very closely and told me that it was very important, and that she had been researching it for about 3 months, and could I please make sure that it got through the process. And so I told her I thought it was on our agenda today, and so I want you all to know that folks out there are looking at this. It's important to them, and they think this is a very important coordinator, and they hope we'll take this very seriously.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair McLean. Just a little pressure here, colleagues. Representative Woodsett.
And I apologize, I'm playing catch up on, and maybe you covered this. So is a salary, that's a two-year time period, right, biennium, the $141,000?
That's a biennial allocation. Yeah.
And the council will appoint the person then, right?
No. Mr. Gallagher, hold on. Mr. Gallagher, would you
yeah,
check,
just
verify
go.
That, please?
Let me go back 1 second here.
We'll momentarily stand at ease.
Thank you.
Representative Whitsitt, the fiscal impact says in the governor's budget $141,329. I'm assuming that is a biennial allocation.
Thank you.
Additional questions or comments? Does anyone have any heartburn at this point?
I would just say we've had testimony about every type of a slug, bug, plant, you name it, and to keep it all lined up, it seems like probably in the future we're going to be dealing with more of it. Maybe we need someone kind of to steer the ship a little bit.
Vice Chair Krieger, that was my thinking exactly. And when this bill came along, it was
you know, just rather fortuitous in terms of its timing in the yeah. presentations that we had. So I agree with you very much. I'm going to recognize Vice Chair Krueger.
Chair, would I move House Bill 209, Senate Bill 209, on the floor with a due pass recommendation?
Committee members, Vice Chair Krueger moves Senate Bill 209 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on his motion? Seeing none, would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Barreto.
Aye.
Representative Esquivel.
Aye.
Representative Frederick.
Yes.
Representative Gorsuch.
Yes.
Representative McEwen.
Aye.
Representative Woodson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Krueger.
Aye.
Vice Chair McClain.
Aye.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes. I'm going to need a carrier. Representative Gorsuch, would you
like to do this?
All right. Representative Gorsuch will carry the bill.
No,
with that, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 209, and I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 248. Mr. Gallagher.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 248 authorizes the state forester to enter into and administer contracts for activities necessary or convenient for sales of timber from lands owned or managed by the State Board of Forestry or State Forestry Department, which include but are not limited to timber harvesting and sorting, transporting, gravel pit development or operation, and road construction, maintenance, or improvement. It exempts activity contacts from public contracts from public contracting law. We have had testimony on this. The committee had a number of questions for the department on this, and we have Brian Pugh and Ed DeBlander were before us last time. I believe they're here today if you continue to have questions.
Thank you very much. I was, committee members, one of the people that had asked a line of questioning, trying to make sure that no one was obtaining unfair advantage in terms of the bid process. The information I received has assured me. I didn't suspect anything wrong. I was just making sure in terms of due diligence. Is there anyone else that has any questions at this point about this bill?
Just maybe a comment.
Yes. Chair.
I think they made the case that under certain conditions, certain sites, timber sales, they might be able to make those more profitable, be able to sort those logs to different mills themselves and try to have a purchaser of the whole thing do it. And they're going to be keeping track of that for us, I would assume. So we'll know in a few years if we pass this, if it's planned out as we think it will.
Thank you very much. And it is my understanding that that is really the underlying purpose of the bill. Representative Esquivel.
Now, this will be an interesting cause and effect because they're going to start merchandising, so that means that like they can take out a number one Peter and then make a number two saw log off the other end of it. So one would go to a lumber mill, the other one would go to a veneer plant and a plywood plant. So it'll be very interesting. They'll get more money for the type of grades that they have.
I think you're accurate, and it was interesting, I thought, that we had testimony from other members of the general public who had been involved themselves in contracting and suggesting that there was the potential, at least, for the state to make additional money by running these. Any further questions or comments? I am not seeing any. I'm going to recognize Vice Chair Krueger, please.
Chair Witt, at the move, Senate Bill 248 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Krueger moves Senate Bill 248 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion on his motion? Seeing none, would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Barreto.
Aye.
Representative Esquivel.
Aye.
Representative Frederick.
Yes.
Representative Gorsuch.
Yes.
Representative McEwen.
Aye.
Representative Woodson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Krueger.
Aye.
Vice Chair McLean.
Aye.
Chair Whip.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes. Anyone like to carry this bill? Vice Chair Krieger. And with that, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 248. Let's see here.
You want to do the Dogami?
I'm going to wait on that one.
Okay.
With that... what do we have for upcoming events?
We do not have anything scheduled for next Thursday unless we carry over matters from today, Mr. Chair. And we are planning for the following week information sessions on sudden oak death syndrome and also on the Hatchery Research Center.
I'm going to carry over the work session on Senate Bill 361A. Let's see here.
Date certain?
Yeah. We also have the Senate Bill 881, which is the hemp seed.
And I'm also going to carry over the work session on Senate Bill 881 as well. Now, in terms of, does that change Thursday's agenda at all? Or
it would. It would put both of these items on our agenda for Thursday morning.
All right. Committee members, with that, is there a time preference that any of you would have in terms of when we would start?
Mr. Chair, can't you hold that to a date certain?
Yes, we can, but I think we need to get these bills out to the floor as quickly as possible.
Time for the committee you're talking about?
Yes, I'm sorry. Maybe I confused you. I'm looking to see if anyone would like 8 a.m., 8:30, 9 o'clock.
I'm here at 6.
8:30.
Yeah, 9:30.
We have one vote for 6 a.m.
Like 9 or 9:30.
It'll be just one vote. Representative Whitson.
I'm in that revenue tax committee, and so if you tell me a certain time, I can duck out of that committee and come down and vote on these two bills. So.
Okay, very good. I heard a couple 9 a.m.s.
9:30.
I'm feeling people moving towards 9 a.m. Is 9 a.m. Is that a problem for anyone? All right, with that, we are adjourned until Thursday at 9 a.m. Thank you very much, committee members. Appreciate all your help.
Are you going to move the aggregate bill just as it is?
Well, that's why I held off on it, because there were enough questions.